Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. Actually, we were in a subcommittee of the subcommittee on public safety while we're waiting for the quorum. However, we are capable of moving forward with a public hearing on House Bill 2205, which is where we shall start. Mr. Borden, would you like to tee it up?
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the subcommittee. Before you is House Bill 2205. It's relating to child victims of commercial sexual exploitation. Section 1 of the measure establishes a fund to end the commercial sexual exploitation of children. The measure provides that the Department of Justice will administer the fund and provide services for intervention and treatment, outreach, education, prevention, training of investigators and service providers, funding for advocacy, promotion and facilitation of interagency and interdepartmental cooperation, and other such activities. The fund would be used, the department would provide grants to applicants and individuals, and it would, the fund would receive funding from private or public entities. The last section of the measure provides for the establishment of an advisory committee to advise the department on policies and procedures related to statewide coordination and planning for delivery of services and recommendations for making awards of financial assistance. The measure has no revenue impact, and there's an indeterminate fiscal impact on the on OLIS.
And so the indeterminate fiscal would be depending on how much money we put into the fund?
Co-chair, the right now the fund does not have a dedicated revenue source.
Okay. Okay. Representative Taylor, are you the only one? And Representative Huffman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The only reason we're bringing you up because I know you're usually concise.
And brief. Brief and concise. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. House Bill 2205 is one of our several child sex trafficking bills that our statewide work group brought into this session. And it's down here because of the fund and the fact that the fund is administered by DOJ. And so Aaron Knott and Shannon Seville are in the room to testify to explain why it won't have a fiscal and why they want and need to administer the fund. It's a very necessary fund that we need to move forward with all of the child sex trafficking stuff that we're doing in the state. So with that, let me see, is there anything? No, I'll shut up now. But thank you so much for hearing the bill.
Absolutely. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Williams, Shields, and members of the committee. I'm Kathleen Taylor, House District 41. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2205. This bill is another product of an ongoing work group on the Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children work group. It has wide participation of stakeholders, including Senator Juan Ryden, Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel, Representative Huffman and myself, as well as representatives from child welfare, mental health, law enforcement, district attorneys, and more. Sex trafficking is rampant. It is so very damaging to the children involved. These kids are truly victims, yet they don't always see themselves in that light. Law enforcement often encounters these children as runaways or delinquents, not identifying them as sex trafficked victims. They often are not funneled into appropriate services, even when they are properly identified. These girls are resistant and often run right back to the streets. In previous sessions, we've been successful in giving district attorneys better tools to prosecute both the traffickers and the buyers of sex. Last February, the legislature allocated $2 million to open a specialized residential treatment center for these girls. These are all positive steps, and many individuals, nonprofit organizations, faith-based communities want to do more. This leads us to House Bill 2205. People and organizations want to help, but want to make sure their efforts will be effective. House Bill 2205 provides a statewide structure and advisory board to help direct those private dollars and efforts to the areas and activities that can do the most good. Modeled after the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Fund, the CAMI Fund, in the Crime Victim Services Division of the Oregon Department of Justice, House Bill 2205 establishes a designated fund, the Fund to End Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children, with an advisory board that can seek out and receive public and private money. These funds could be used for victim services like prevention and treatment. They could be used for specialized training for law enforcement and prosecutors. They could be used for public education and outreach efforts. Colleagues, we need this type of coordinated statewide effort. House Bill 2205 can make the collaboration a reality, and I urge you to move House Bill 2205 forward with a due pass recommendation.
We're happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
There's nobody who's opposed to this bill. Great. Any questions for this panel?
Yep.
Representative Krieger.
What's the definition of a child under this section?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that would be an outstanding question for
the professionals.
Department of Justice personnel that are going to follow us.
Well, you know, just as a sidelight, you know, Representative Tomei, around John's and forced prostitution and all this was relentless for about 12 years. We've got to get a handle on this at some point, because you talk about something that affects children's lives forever. They carry it with them forever.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, when Representative Tomei announced last year that she was going to be retiring at the end of the February session, I reached out to her and asked if anyone was going to step in to fill her shoes on that work group and be the legislative conduit between Department of Justice and the work group and the legislature, and she said not at that time. Fortunately, Representative Taylor has joined me on the work group, so we both sit in on the work group and try to do the good work. Part of the focus also is out of the, I think it was the current biennial budget, that we opened up a 15-bed home in Portland area for girls targeted 11 to 15 years old to get them out of the sex trafficking trade and keep an eye on them. But that's an ongoing budgetary need, and so I've worked with the co-chairs to make sure that we've got the home open with the $2 million that we appropriated in the 13-15 biennium, but the need is ongoing, and we can't just fund it once and walk away. Through this work, like Representative Taylor said, we've also found out that, you know, folks that Joel Shapiro and others work with, they do raise a considerable amount of money, because this is such an egregious thing that's happening to kids, and we need to have a fund that can be administered so that we can fund some of these projects, and so that's part of the reason that you'll hear for the fund. And I don't know, is Aaron and Shannon behind me shaking their heads going, no, he got it all screwed up? But anyway, just trying to do good work, and you're right, connecting Representative Tomei to it.
Good. You're a smart man, Representative Huffman, and punting that to the professional staff. So let's bring them up. Mr. Knott and Shannon Spell.
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon Attorney General in the Department of Justice, here in support of House Bill 2205. This really is the result of a continuing project that was led for years by former Representative Carolyn Tomei. And one of the significant accomplishments of the work group that she ran out of her home for several of those years was the development of a shelter for the victims of sex trafficking, which I understand has opened its doors and was the result of a legislative decision going, I think, all the way back to 2013. But in the process of figuring out how that shelter would operate and what the contours on that would be, we realized a couple of things. First of all, as everyone here knows, perhaps better than anyone else, public spending is always precarious. I mean, they're the graveyard of good state programs that have died over the years because of budget cuts. We all know how significant it is. But this area, the prevention of child sex trafficking, differs from a lot of those other projects insofar as there is a host of nonprofits and community groups that are looking to get involved in this area. And this work group involved participation from Senator Wyden, from U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall, and they said on the federal level as well as the state level, they reiterated this several times, there's money available, but nowhere to put it. And so that really started this conversation of, okay, where's an accountable place that the public and the private sectors can meet to try and do some good in this area, to keep the shelter open and to make other important progress in combating sex trafficking? Because it's very clear, I think, both to the Department of Justice and other agencies, that this particular evil hits on multiple levels. It's in our juvenile system, it's in our dependency system, and it's in our criminal system, often on the level of, if somebody is arrested for prostitution, for a drug offense, that person may be the victim of sex trafficking, but the skills that we need to develop as a society, as law enforcement, judicial branch, defense attorneys, to identify that person, to respond correctly, there is tremendous need. So with me is Shannon Savelle. She's the head of our Crime Victim Services Division. She's here mostly to explain operationally the kind of funds that CVSD already manages and how it would fit into that world. So I'll turn it over to her.
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, members of the committee, my name is Shannon Savelle. I'm the Director of Crime Victim Services at the Oregon Department of Justice. I don't want to take up too much of your time, so I'll be very brief on what this was modeled after and happy to answer any questions. Representative was correct. This was partially modeled on the CAMI, the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Fund. It was also modeled on the Sexual Assault Victim Emergency Fund, which is a fund that exists within the Department of Justice. We are allowed by statute, it's in Chapter 147, to receive donations and to apply them to the fund and then to use them to reimburse victims and survivors of sexual assault for the emergency forensic medical exams. So this bill, as it's written here, is largely modeled on the language that's in the Save Fund statute that allows us to receive donations. We also manage a fund similar to this. It's the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. And the reason it's similar is that within the series of statutes, there are pretty broad parameters for what the money is to be used for. For instance, you can use it, we're supposed to use it for multidisciplinary, working with other agencies, for training, for essential services. And then there are further provisions that require us to have an advisory committee and determine who should be on the advisory committee to make sure it is truly multidisciplinary. But again, most of the parameters for that fund are in Oregon administrative rule. You don't find them in the statute. So when I was approached by Representative Tomei to write this, I simply utilized the language that was in the Save Fund statute as well as ODSVS. It's anticipated that we would do a considerable amount of rulemaking. I will tell you that within the Save Fund in the last month, we received about $3,000 worth of donations. It varies. Sometimes it's $100. Sometimes it's a couple thousand, but that's about it. And so that's what we were looking at as kind of a baseline. And we have a CSEC intervention coordinator who will be working with Mr. Shapiro, who was previously mentioned, and hopefully continuing to conduct outreach in the community and see if we can bring in some of those larger donors to fund some of the ongoing intervention efforts the state needs and that will be outlined by an advisory committee.
Great. Any questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Aaron, does DOJ have a report on operations that you've stopped or any arrest in this business? Is there a report from the Department of Justice on what all we're doing and you've had successes publicly available?
Yeah. And Chair Shields, Representative Wisnett, we've collaborated on studies that squarely address this, and we provided input. I'm going to let Shannon describe what those studies were.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, Representative Wisnett, members of the committee. The PSU conducted a study a couple years ago, I think now, may have been 18 months ago, that looked at over a couple years the number of estimated CSEC survivors that have been encountered by DHS, the Portland Police Bureau, and the District Attorney's Office. There haven't been other studies beyond that. PSU is currently working on that and trying to continue to collect data. The Oregon Department of Justice's role at this point is mostly in the intervention advocacy training piece. So through CVSD, it would be to work. We are currently working with jurisdictions to develop responses and programs that can actually address survivors. We are not currently, or my division is not.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Shannon, both of them. What I'm after is, I mean, everyone here, as the chair said, we're going to support the bill, and we're grateful for it, and we're all concerned about the treatment. What are we doing to stop the practice? What are we doing to go after the people in the business that are making money on this? What's our results?
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett, members of the committee. For my part, what I can address is what I know that we are currently working on. Our CSEC intervention coordinator is currently in Deschutes County, Clackamas, Multnomah, Washington, and in Marion. and they are working with local police to bring in training. So what they're doing largely right now is focusing on the Portland Police Bureau has a sex crimes or sex trafficking unit. And through funding that we're able to provide at DOJ, we are bringing those officers out to train actually people on the ground to identify and respond to victims and survivors of sex trafficking. It's complicated in Portland, as you can imagine. You see 82nd Avenue, and you are largely picking up people that are engaged in drugs in some fashion, in shoplifting, or who are actually there and they've been compelled into prostitution. In places like Deschutes County and other counties, we're going to be looking more at truck stops and things like that where there's trafficking. So for at this point, what we're doing is we're bringing in police officers who currently do the work to train and help develop the responses in other areas. And it does really vary what the responses look like, whether you're looking at a more frontier rural county or an I-5 corridor county.
And if I may, Chair Shields, Representative Wisnant, and my sidebar conversation with Representative Huffman, there are a few additional points I think worth making. Presumptive jurisdiction for prosecuting most of the crimes that we would describe as sex trafficking fall to the district attorney. And the district attorneys are becoming, and I've seen this, ever more robust in their approach to sex trafficking. Counties are starting the process of allocating specific prosecutors who do nothing but that kind of work. That's a trend that is growing. It's an important trend. And the underlying criminal sanction for something like a compelling prostitution is very serious. When we are able to land a case against these traffickers, they go away for a very long time. I'll tell you what the prosecutors testified to at multiple points earlier this session is that most of the difficulty comes with that process of getting a victim of sex trafficking to the point where they are an effective witness on behalf of the prosecution. There's been policy discussion about legislative ways we can facilitate that. I think the sex trafficking work group will continue to meet in the interim with that in mind. But that's where these two things plug in. Services for victims and getting a victim to a place where they understand that their abuser is an abuser is how you put these people away.
And compelling prostitution, Aaron, is a Measure 11 offense, if I recall.
Yeah, Chair Shields, that's correct.
Representative Gorsuch.
So we've heard a lot about Multnomah County and some things about rural counties. How would you describe the geography of this in the state of Oregon? Is it an I-5 corridor problem? Is it a whole state problem? Because I know I-5 is a serious issue.
And Chair Shields, Chair Williamson, Representative Gorsuch, he may have started as an I-5 problem, like many criminogenic models that we have, but we've seen significant sex trafficking events associated with things like the Pendleton Roundup. And yeah, that's one that's actually been the subject of quite a bit of attention. And truck stops on secondary corridors outside of the I-5 corridor. Keep in mind, the I-5 corridor is, especially in its northern half, the most heavily, reliably policed area of the state. So it's in many areas, not just sex trafficking, we're seeing movement to sort of less known corridors.
Follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
And so if we think about the southern and eastern sections of the state, it may be that we're not even able to identify all of the problems because of a lack of law enforcement. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Chair Shields, Chair Williamson, Representative Gorsuch, I agree with that completely. Okay. And it's the nature of sex trafficking that many of the victims never come forward. They may not even perceive themselves as victims. So reporting rates are low. You combine that with an environment where law enforcement is not easy to come by, I think we are missing a high number of these cases.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
Senator
you.
Bates?
Just to follow up on Representative Wisnant's comments, I'm concerned also that we're not really prosecuting a case like we should. In our county, in Jackson County, we have a new sheriff who was very involved in this prior to becoming a new sheriff, Corey Falls. I've attended several of his lectures on it, and rural areas like ours are a spotting area. They send spotters down to pick girls out they think that are susceptible and get them up to Portland where the real money is. And it's really disgusting. They get a certain amount for certain ages and hair color, more for one, less for other. It's just an amazing process these people go through. They are very organized and very smart about what they do. They suck these girls in, become their friends, get them on drugs, and then put them out. I would think one of the approaches we need to take is not just trying to get the victims to testify against these people, but to gather evidence outside of that and regardless of the victim's position, prosecute these people and do it robustly. I haven't heard also what we do with the Johns. You know, I'm a physician. I can fix these people, okay? But you won't let me.
I agree.
Okay? Think about that.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm glad you said it. I was thinking it.
Senator Schrader had a bill. Just that. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Does anybody else like to testify on this bill? Joel? Okay. All right. Anything else, Mr. Ford? All right. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2205. And are you want to go into CJC or to 128? And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 5506, the budget bill of the Criminal Justice Commission. Linda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 5506 is the budget for the Criminal Justice Commission. It features, as recommended to you, $35 million general fund to support Justice Reinvestment Grant Program, $14 million total funds for specialty court grant funding. I will move now to the first page, which is your page four, or one of five. Everything has two sets of numbers. The detail on this is that there's $50,047,019 of general fund, $494,068 other funds, and $7,305,073 of federal funds for a total of $57.8 million. The total is 76% higher than the 13-15 legislatively approved budget. General fund is about 110% higher than ledge approved. The second page looks like the first page because CJC has only one division. So moving on to your page six, or three of five, there are three packages. The first one recognizes, reduces federal fund expenditure limitation due to the one-time drawdown of accumulated federal funds to support the Justice Reinvestment Program during the 13-15 biennium. That's a reduction of $5.2 million in expenditure limitation. The next package, package 801, makes technical adjustments to recognize several federal fund grants that have come since then. So we're minus 5.2 and then we're plus 5.7 million. There's Burn Justice Assistant Grant funds of 5.5 million, Statistical Analysis Center funds of 119,000, residential substance abuse treatment funds of 101,000 for a total of 5,687,530. The next package, package 802, Justice Reinvestment. Package provides general fund for justice reinvestment grants to local criminal justice systems and treatment providers. It's $23,715,150 available for grants. It adds two positions to implement and administer the grant program. And that is a program analyst three and a research analyst two. And it also increases a half-time accounting technician to a full-time accounting technician. So added to base general fund of $10 million, the total available for justice reinvestment is $33.7 million for the grants. Package adds $25 million. And with that, I'm finished with the recommendation.
Any questions?
I get a lot of questions. I keep bringing it up yet. Does that include the funding for the specialty courts? Is that in there? Is that, how does that?
Yes.
That is included.
There's $14 million in there for specialty courts.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Wasn't
it? Is that for any new courts, or is that status quo on the specialty courts?
I believe it is status quo. However, there's a review every 2 years of how the courts are doing. So it's possible that there could be a new one, but that would be probably at the expense of an old one.
So there's no new specialty matter, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. There's no new courts in this budget.
Not that I know of.
What? Mr. Chair, if a county decided with their LIPSEC in their grant to apply for a specialty court, they could get different money for a specialty court under the 3194 Justice Reinvestment dollars. But they would have to, in the county, decide that was part of it.
That would require maintenance of effort, right? It wouldn't be a one time. It wouldn't be a continuation.
Senator Bates.
A couple quick questions. Does this include funds for keeping women at the county level that we just put together to prevent the opening of another prison, since we're so close to closing it up in Coffee Creek, with only 5 beds left?
Senator Bates, that does not fall in this budget. That would fall either with a particular bill or in the DOC budget.
I think in about 2 months we should have that fiscal.
3503. But Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, again, if a county decided to focus on that population with their justice reinvestment dollars, they could do that. They're flexible enough for that. But House Bill 3503 is the House bill you're looking for, and it's
Thank
coming.
Thank you.
Keep hearing. Senator
Winters. Just for clarification, so we're talking about justice reinvestment is 33.7?
Correct.
Not 40?
Correct.
And not 50.
And not 58.
That's right. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move the LFO recommendations to Senate Bill 5506.
Oh, yes.
With hesitation.
Just a moment. Representative Williamson has moved the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5506. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I will give a yes vote, but I'm really, 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 and hope that if there is any way that we find somewhere in this process before we get out of this building that we increase or find some way to increase the dollars for justice reinvestment. There was a lot of work that was done on 3194. Most of us were engaged and involved with it, and it's interesting because the initial results coming out is saying that it's working. So, you know, for me, I would hope if the co-chairs are listening that we try to find some additional resources where possible.
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to reiterate my support for what Senator Winters just said. I think it's tremendously important.
Well noted. Anyone else?
Courtesy, yes, Mr. Chair. Okay. I change my vote on the floor.
All right. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Linda.
Mr. Chair, I will now move to your page 10, which is the second page of key performance measures. The agency has two KPMs, customer service and grant administration, and LFO recommends raising the targets for both KPMs to reflect recent achievements. All the targets are now 95% or higher.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations on key performance measures.
Representative Williamson has moved the LFO recommendation on key performance measures. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
And now returning to page 2 of the work session memo, there are no budget notes associated with this budget. The recommended changes to the appropriation bill. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a budget of $50,047,019 general fund, $494,068 other funds, $7,305,073 federal funds, 11 positions, 11 FTE, and that Senate Bill 5506 be amended accordingly.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendations to adopt the amendment to Senate Bill 5506.
Representative Williamson has moved the LFO recommendation to adopt the amendments to Senate Bill 5506. Is there any discussion? I, too, would like to be associated with the comments of Representative Gorsuch and Senator Winters. I think Representative Williamson and I were pushing the co-chairs as far as we could go. We put in that $50 million would be warranted. But unfortunately, the co-chairs have other considerations to keep balanced as well. So what I'm hopeful is that we'll be able to plug some money back into the end of session program change bill. And I think we'll all keep pushing the co-chairs to make that make sure that that's done, because you can pay now or pay later. All right.
Mr.
So,
Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. I'd like on the record, too, I just don't understand how, although I voted against the bill originally and see the results have come in, I don't know how we can fund it. The counties and the people have come in and testified in support of what all this is doing. I think it is short-sighted, and I understand the difficulty that the co-chairs have, but I don't accept what they've submitted so far as acceptable. Thank you.
Appreciate that comment. All right, so let's do the vote. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5506 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson has moved Senate Bill 5506 as amended to the full Committee of Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Carrier on the House side?
Second.
Representative Williamson on the Senate side? Senator Winters will carry it on the Senate side. All right.
And to full,
yes. All right, we're ready to close out. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5506 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 128. Quick switch. Julie, please do that for us.
Thanks, Senator Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, and committee members. Senate Bill 128 relates to state police telecommunicators, like 911 operators. Excuse me. Would include the base pay of telecommunicators employed by the five public safety answering points in Oregon with the most employees as a comparable factor to be considered by an arbitrator in establishing pay for telecommunicators employed by the Oregon State Police. In OLIS, you'll find a preliminary Ways and Means staff measure summary, the original staff measure summary, the measure history, and the fiscal impact, which is estimated at $214,000 in the 2015-17 biennium, and $645,640 when fully implemented in
2017-19. All right. Let's see, we have three people to testify. Let's bring them all up at the same time. If there are enough chairs. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Shields and Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Mike Eli. I'm the Vice President of the Oregon State Police Officers Association, here today in support of Senate Bill 128. I'll make this brief. The goal of this bill is to retain and recruit high-quality telecommunicators. Currently, we have approximately 61 telecommunicators in both of our centers. One's in Salem, and the other one is in Central Point. And we're having difficulty with retention, with recruiting, and, of course, overall wellness. We have sick leave usage, high turnover rates, and vacancies regarding FTEs that we are struggling through. So what Senate Bill 128 does is it creates comparables with the top five answering points within the state of Oregon. So that would be Portland, Washington County, Clackamas, Salem, and the last one being Lane County. Obviously, this is not going to set their pay. Their pay will be set between negotiations with the Oregon State Police Officer Association, the Oregon State Police, and also with DAS representatives. But what this does is it makes the ground fair for the telecommunicators to establish some sort of pay parity like we did for the troopers several years ago. I also have two dispatchers, one from Salem and one from Central Point, that was brought up here to testify from their perspectives.
Representative Gorsuch.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question in terms of how out of balance the folks at OSP are when you compare it to some of those other counties.
Co-Chairs Shields and Williamson, Representative Gorsuch. Currently, right now, when you look at the comparables of the top five that have been mentioned, they're somewhere approximately 25% less than what the other five comparators are making, correct?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Shields, Williamson, members of the committee. My name is John Stevie. I am a member of the Oregon State Police Officers Association and asking for your support, Senate Bill 128A. In the time I've been an Oregon State Police dispatcher, I've held many positions, including call taker, dispatcher, shift supervisor, training coordinator. In that time, our trends have been slowly spiraling out of bounds as far as recruitment and retention. A national average right now is 17% to 19%, or simply every 2 out of every 10 dispatchers leave the field every 2 to 3 years. Oregon State Police's numbers are a little higher than that. We're about 3 times the national average. Over my 16 years, we've lost almost close to 90 people, either not recruiting them well enough and they don't make it through training, or they move on to other agencies. the three reasons they do that are they go to another job somewhere else for the same money or more money, or they realize the job isn't for them, or they didn't complete the training in time. This simply tells us two things, that our recruitment and retention is not working. To further hammer this home, over the last 7 years, my center alone has logged over 83,000 hours of overtime. When you hook that to a median overtime wage, you're upwards of a couple million dollars already just in overtime wages for minimum staffing. That doesn't even address the cost of what it takes to train a dispatcher. We're about $25,000, but that doesn't include any of the auxiliary things as far as background checks, medical clearances. It's just that's flat to get them in the door, $25,000. When we're losing 5 to 6 people a year, that quickly adds up. I thank you for your time to testify and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Knocked it out of the park. No questions.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields and Williams and committee members. My name is Kit Flanagan Clark, and I've been a dispatcher for over 20 years, and I'm a member of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. I'm a dispatcher. I'm also a field training officer. I've acted as a lead worker, and I'm also a member of a team-directed committee where we work on between labor and management, building our own schedules. I'm encouraging you to support Senate Bill 128A for many things. I'm going to highlight three. One is the ability to attract and retain qualified applicants as well as be competitive with other agencies. So much time and energy is spent in training new hires only to have them to leave for another agency. Two, the workload. Our workload is very unique but comparable to a 911 center. We may not be necessarily answering a direct 911 phone line, but we are getting them transferred to us in various counties, as well as different functions that are required for us as dispatchers. One, field fish and game. We are required to triage and refer and know specific knowledge in order to be able to direct it to the appropriate trooper, or having to provide direction for the caller themselves. We also facilitate, and which is becoming much more common, is explosives calls, suspicious objects, that sort of thing, criminal calls, or crimes against children. In addition to monitoring our troopers, we're also monitoring BLM officers, ODF officers, as well as transport units that are transporting inmates back and forth to each state facility. On top of that, we are required to answer the phone and facilitate and input information into our computer-aided dispatch system. We are handling for a county 7 days a week, 12 and a half hours a day, a day, 911 calls in that one specific county, which in addition adds to an already heavy workload. Three, our turnover rate is high. As both Mike and John have said, that over 20 years, we have never in my center been fully staffed, never. And too many times we're being asked to work in conditions where the workload can be a little bit too taxing. We facilitate and dispatch for several counties in each dispatch center. Mine alone is 17. So sometimes it can get a little hectic with, more than one county, and the troopers and their requests and their. This contributes to a burnout rate, which leads to an increase of sick time, and low, which contributes to the even low staffing there. an overtime rate again. So I please support Senate Bill 128A, and thank you for your time and allowing me to speak in front of you. Any questions?
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I imagine that on top of the fatigue and the sick time and everything else, that it has a serious impact on morale.
Yes. Yes, it does.
And you said you're taking care of 17 counties in terms of where the troopers are and everybody else that's out there?
Not all at once. In the very early morning hours,
yeah.
It's split up between two people. But yes, as a whole dispatch center, we have anywhere from 15 to 17 counties, because we do a little bit of one county that bleeds over.
Follow up. Thank you very much. I worked in law enforcement along with a couple of my other colleagues here a while back. But my wife worked for Portland Police in a number of different capacities, including 911 dispatch for Multnomah County. So I know just how hard you all work, and I know that forced overtime, inadequate staffing levels, things like that have a huge impact on the ability to do the job properly, and you are doing, law enforcement can't do this without the dispatch piece. So I applaud your efforts and hope we are able to move this forward.
Thank you, Representative Gorsuch.
Representative Krieger. Oh, I'm sorry, and then Senator Bates. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I thought I'd announce that it was 51 years ago today that I started out in Gold Beach with the state police, and then, of course, we were managed or called out either from Coquille or Medford, and about three-fourths of the time they could not get you. Had repeaters up on the hill that were trying to maintain them, so the system is much, much different, but the need's probably greater than it's ever been.
Senator Bates.
Oh, thank you. Which one of you from Central Point? Oh, thanks. And thanks for coming clear up today, and thanks for the work you do. I'm not going to say more than Representative Gorsuch did. I know you're doing a tough job. I know it's tough out there for the troopers in Southern Oregon right now, too. I know some of them personally, and they're working hard, and it's really a tough situation to get more troopers out there and get you more help, too. But thanks for coming up.
Yes,
you seem nervous talking to us. You handle those calls every day. I don't get it. We should be,
that's right.
Be a piece of cake.
Behind the scenes.
But I do have a question for LFO. Have we done an analysis of overtime costs and open positions and what the overall cost would be to fill those positions if we paid a higher wage and cut the overtime down? Has that been looked at yet?
Senator Bates, I'm not sure if it has. I made a note, actually, to do that.
Thank you. I think we do. If we're really paying a lot of overtime and have to figure in the cost of retraining people, mm-hmm. we may find that it's more cost-effective simply to raise wages and keep those people there and have a better outcome for everybody.
Thanks.
Senator Winters.
Just a comment. The Oregon State Police, and we've heard this before, not only as it deals with the dispatchers, but in general, we have the challenge with the agency of having comparable salaries and what have you. You know, we've had this issue where, you know, it's the salary scales and are comparable in our counties and cities at a higher level than what exists within OSP. So, you know, I've been on this bandwagon for some time. Not only this, but with the equipment and everything else. So we need to really make certain that we are providing our agency with the not only the comparable wage, but with the tools that they need to do a job with. And so, you know, if you notice that both the good Senator Devlin and I are on this bill, because I think that we need to make certain that we're providing them with those resources and, mm-hmm. and salary wages that they deserve and need. So just needed to put that on the record. I've always been troubled when we get into a situation where we train and we develop and then some other agency or someplace else actually recruits and leave. And so you've got retraining and retooling all over again.
Yes. I don't know what cities and counties are yet.
Well, they're the ones, yes, I am.
Talking about hospitals, hospital practices?
No.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know, yeah.
All right, Representative Barker.
I'm just going to say, back in the early 80s, committee, and
I was a supervisor at the dispatch center in Portland on the graveyard shift, and there'd be several times when I had to tell somebody who was exhausted, who needed to get home to take care of their kids, you have to stay and work another shift because of the shorthandedness. And one time they were doing, somebody was doing a wage study up there, and we had a police lieutenant, but a police sergeant, which is what I was doing. And they said, how do you compare to your dispatch supervisor, the civilian supervisor? And I said, she knows about twice as much and makes about $5,000 a year less. Huh. So it is important in order to have qualified people and to keep them there. And they are vital to the police business. Right. Without great dispatchers, it really makes a difference. So thank you for the work you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Likewise, thank you for your service. Any other comments? All right.
I just have one. Sorry. Just to be on the record, we should be completely, fully funding all aspects of the Oregon State Police to its full potential level. And I think it's obscene that we do not do that. And I'm certainly not blaming anybody here, but the state legislature in general is not doing its job when it comes to this.
We haven't had full force since Governor Attia.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had good budgets when I was on Ways and Means.
Well, there you go. See, you need to go back.
All right. Any other comments? We are adjourned. Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you. Comments.